The Money Show.
Make Money Mondays.
Make Money Mondays, personal edition. Saki Matosoma this evening. He's got so many roles. Chairman at Safika is probably the easiest way of describing him. As earlier said, he was on the NEC of the ANC. He's no longer on the NEC of the ANC. He was once a very prominent politician. He was a member of Nelson Mandela's first parliament before he left to go and run Transnet. Former political prisoner. He was in prison until 1982, part of the United Democratic Front, the mass democratic movement. He's had a very, very busy political career, and that then morphed into business. He was at Transnet. He then was appointed also to the board at Standard Bank, became the deputy chairman, and then also became, it was on the boards of StanLib and Liberty. Are you focused entirely now, Saki, on your own business affairs?
Yes, I'd say 80%. There's still some socially relevant involvement, and of course there is Vodacom.
Of course, Vodacom, yes.
And Volkswagen.
And Volkswagen, absolutely. I mean, Vodacom's doing okay. You know, there's big demand, of course, for broadband, and there's been this slight lifting of the of spectrum during this crisis, which is, I think, has been welcome to all cell phone providers. But Volkswagen, a massive exporter for the South African economy, I think that is continuing fairly evenly. But I mean, obviously, there's some restrictions on production out of Uitenhage.
Yes, yes, they are. And of course, the biggest restriction is the economies where we sell the vehicles to, which is in the UK and the US and other markets. Obviously, in the last 3-4 months, there's hardly been any orders coming from those markets. But as they begin to reopen, production has begun and is steadily going back to the numbers, but it's going to take time because we don't know what the car demand in the world is going to be and what the shift is, the fundamental shift in ownership of cars, because shared riding and all those kinds of things, COVID may accelerate some of those things as it has in other technologies.
And how's life, I mean, for Saki Matosoma? I mean, you are running Safika. What's Safika's business interests and how are you holding up under current lockdowns, the businesses that you're invested in?
We have survived, and fortunately, we're not in some of the industries that were the hardest hit. Our biggest business now is mining, which is mining manganese, and we sell manganese to the Chinese market and other markets. It was not affected as much as because it's an open pit mine. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it is very dependent on the growth of the Chinese market, particularly insofar as steel and steel-related products are concerned. So we had contrary to what we had expected, we had the prices going up as China was reopening because stocks were low. And of course, once the stock started coming in from South Africa and Australia and Ghana and other manganese-producing areas, the price started to trend down, but it is still within tolerable levels.
What's your sense of the country's politics at the moment?
I think I share the frustrations of many South Africans, including those who are in the political arena themselves, because sometimes we tend to think that the people who worry and are concerned are only those of us who are outside of the formal structured politics. But in my experience in interacting with people, even those who are in positions in the structured political organizations and government are as concerned as many of us are. The question is, how do we change the situation? And that is a very difficult question. Some people are arguing, and I'm amongst one of those, that probably what is required is to change the electoral system. Because with this kind of electoral system we have, where people choose a party as opposed to the individuals they may believe in, one of the consequences, unintended consequences, is that party loyalty or loyalty to the tradition and the history of a party becomes more primary than who is actually qualified to govern at this point in time.
Do you still feel close to the ANC? Is the ANC still your home? If you don't mind being that impertinent to ask you that question. I think it's important, though, as many people's loyalties are things I think are being questioned at the moment.
It's impossible not to feel the ANC as close to your home. I spend most of my life working for the ANC as a person. And I don't believe that there is anything wrong with the policies of the ANC. This is precisely why it's very difficult to come up with an opposition. I think what is a problem is the politicians and the people who have volunteered to become leaders of our the ANC in particular and other political movements. That is the issue, and therefore I can't find anything that could be a substitute for the ANC in terms of its intended policies. But in terms of the implementation of those policies, and of course the theft and the which makes me fume, and I think makes a lot of South Africans fume. The theft is actually the real problem. Whether the ANC will ever be able to overcome those is a question for debate.
Why is it so hard? Why is it so hard, Saki, to push back against the wholesale looting? I mean, the shameless looting that we see on a daily basis, even now with COVID-19 ravaging communities and society and the economy, there are charlatans and opportunists who just, cannot wait for every opportunity to help themselves, no matter how deep the personal suffering they may cause.
I think part of the problem is that it's become endemic. And therefore, I suppose that the most other important thing is the factionalism in the ANC, in the sense that when a leader at whatever level, from the presidency to the branch chairman, when the leader needs to be elected into a position, they have to come into alliances with all kinds of creepy cronies, as I call them. And then what happens is that they then turn around to have to reward these people by giving them positions in the structure, whether they have the skills or whether they have the proclivity and the potential to steal. You have to defend your faction, so to say. And I can't, when I look at the ANC, there are various sections, there are two big factions, there are many other factions at local level. And this is what happens. And therefore, they really can't address this thing as robustly as they know they should do. I believe that President Ramaphosa has the intention and the will to deal with corruption. But the fact of the matter is that some of the people who put him into office are some of the people who are actually leading the looting. And to deal with them politically as an organization is very, very difficult. And I feel sorry, for instance, for people like David Makura, who I know as a person is not aligned to corruption. But to deal with the kinds of cumbersome structures of a divided political organization is the political reality that they've got to deal with.
So tell me about growing up. I mean, we know that you went to prison as a youngster, as a 19-year-old. I mean, you were a leader of the student protest movement. You were sentenced to 5 years on Robben Island. You were there until 1982. Was it all politics between 1982 and 1994, or did you do paid work in that time? What was your economic status in those days?
I came out of Robben Island in 1982 and went back home to Port Elizabeth. And I applied for an apprenticeship job at Ford Motor Company, which is a walking distance from my home. And I got a response that said, well, we think you are interesting. However, if you decide to emigrate to South Africa, we will consider you. And the reason why they said that is that all black South Africans in that part of the world were considered to be either citizens of the Transkei or citizens of the Sky. And so I gave up the idea of getting a job in the private sector. As I was giving up that idea, I got a job in a company called Blasting and Excavating, which was building a road in the township, but also was building the bridges in the Southern Cape on the N2. Okay. And I was given a job as a soils analyst and earning 400 rand a month to analyze the soil for compaction purposes and that kind of thing. Within a month, the security police were there to say, you cannot employ a person like this. He's an ex-islander. You work with explosives. And therefore, we can't be sure. So I lost my job, my first job after Robben Island. Then I went to work for the East Cape Council of Churches. And from there, I got a scholarship to go to study in the US and left in 83 and came back in 86. Okay. Then I continued to work for the Council of Churches with Archbishop Tutu and Beyers Naudé and Frank Chikane, Abigail Abraham and those people. Until the ANC was unbanned. And I went to work for the ANC on loan from the SACC and never came back to the SACC.
Do you miss the church?
I don't miss the church in the sense that I'm still very connected to it, to my own church, the Anglican Church, as well as a lot of people that I have known in the years that I worked for the church.
Saki Maxozoma is our guest this evening. Make Money Mondays. More with him in just a moment. I want to talk to him about money. I mean, he then rose very quickly through the ranks of the ANC, became a member of parliament, left parliament to go and run Transnet, and from there went into the private sector in a very meaningful way. We'll pick up with him on money, the meaning of money, how to use money better, and whether or not there are any bad money habits in a moment.
The Money Show. Make Money Mondays.
Guest is Saki Maxozoma, who is the chairman of Safika Holdings, chairman of Vodacom. And tell me, Saki, I mean, money is central to existence. It's central to our everyday lives. Is it the be-all and end-all to you?
Yeah, I'd put it differently and say money is a medium we need in order to facilitate activities of various kinds, economic and just living. But I think it's when we elevate it to a point where it becomes the thing that we worship that it becomes a problem, because there's always this issue about people say money is a root of all evil. I can't remember what part of the Bible says that, but in reality, what that extract from the Bible says, it says the love of money is the root of all evil. And I think making a distinction between that, I personally take a view, and when I speak to even to younger people, is that you don't get up every day from your bed and say, I'm going to make money. You get up to say, I'm going to work and I'm going to do the best that I can within the context of the business that I'm in. And money is a reward of doing your best. Obviously, if you in a public company, you are using other people's money, and they put their money in there for a return. And if you don't believe in that, you should not be in that kind of business. But I would say that if ever I found myself in a business where money was like, somebody said to me about the mining industry in the past, he said, you send people down a mine, and you say every day, you say to yourself, let's go and make money and dig some mineral, and in the process we'll kill a few people. I would never want to find myself in that kind of business where a human life and dignity and everything else is subordinated to money.
Are you any good at managing your own money? I mean, you've worked in the corporate sector. You've had access to some of the best brains in the money industry. Do you outsource it all? Do you actively participate? How do you manage the Maxozoma money, the legacy?
I accept that I'm not. This is not my area of expertise. So I exhaust some of many of the day-to-day decision making by this share and sell that share to people to whom this is a profession, because also you need to have the detail and time to be able to do that. But insofar as medium to longer term investment, I do take an active interest, but still do that with people who are much better equipped to do that than I am.
And when you look at money decisions, I mean, we've all made mistakes. Some of us made bigger personal money mistakes than others. Do you look back on 20, 30 years of work and investing and go, could have done that better?
Oh, many. I think anybody who can look back and say, I could have done that better, probably didn't do much in that period. But I use a simple example, though, that if I go and buy a pair of shoes and I make a decision on the pair of shoes, I buy the pair of shoes and I go home, I don't go about window shopping again to see if there is another better pair of shoes in the mall. Because not find your way forward. I was looking for a better word for that. Not find your way forward if you keep looking back, if you keep looking in the rearview mirror. But what I think is important is to remember the mistakes that you've made, and to make sure that you don't repeat those, but also not make them disable you from taking decisions in the future, because the past is the past. You can, in the majority of cases, you cannot undo. So you learn from it, but you look forward.
What's been your most embarrassing money mistake? Come on, you can tell us.
I think my most embarrassing money mistake is not investing in something that somebody brought to me and said, look, you can make money on this thing in this way and this way, and then me saying it sounds too good to be true. But I take a view also that even in those kinds of instances, you have to accept that you will win some and you will lose some. And so I don't fret about that for too long.
So you're not going to tell us what the biggest missed opportunity was?
Unfortunately,
I'm not. Okay, then you've got to tell us your biggest money mistake. I mean, or maybe your darkest money habit. I mean, do you like expensive wine? You certainly like shoes, it would seem. I mean, do you have any bad money habits?
I like wine. I buy books. And music are probably my greatest personal item expenditure. But it's changing in a bit, because now instead of buying CDs, I'm buying online. But still, books and music are things that I've run out of space for those kinds of things. So that's where those are the things that I overindulge in, I think.
Are you happy to stream music? Or
travel is another one. Unfortunately, it's not... I was going to say travel is another one. But I justify that to myself that A, it's therapeutic. B, it is educational, because I learn so much when I travel, say, at Vietnam or Thailand or China or some other country.
Do you stream music or do you want to own it? I mean, because nowadays it feels like we don't need to own too much stuff. We can go to the book and the library and borrow a book. We can stream our music. We can... rent holiday places. We don't necessarily need to own the holiday places. What's your view?
Well, let's start with holiday places. I grew up in a four-roomed house in KwaZulu-Natal in Port Elizabeth. And I think I've got a fetish with space.
Yeah.
And at this stage, I should be thinking about downsizing, but I can't think myself living in a flat again, you know. In that mix, I should show the cell I occupied for 5 years on Robben Island. So I tend to want to have a place that I own. But on the other hand, I've come to understand that it's not practical to have a space everywhere in the world. For music, I'm now probably halfway in my transition from CDs to buying online. I'm not streaming as much as I do, because as somebody who travels, I'd like to have my music in my on my phone or on my iPad or something, so that if I'm traveling, it's accessible, because it's not that easy when you travel to have the music easily accessible. But I think I am maybe even more 75% towards finding music in the internet rather than buying physical stuff.
Sakima Kuzoma, thank you so much for sharing your time with us this evening. Chairman of Safika Holdings, some interesting views on politics, money, and business. Thank you so much, Saki Makozoba, wrapping up this evening's Money Show. Good night.